Welcome to the London Welsh Rugby Club podcast.
Our guest this week is former London Welsh back row sensation, Mike Denby. Mike was signed by Phil Greening and Mike Friday at London Welsh. But when he turned up, it was Lynn Jones who was the head coach. Prior to joining the club, Mike had taken a different non-academy route to professional rugby. He combined studying business at Plymouth with playing senior men's rugby for Western Supermare in Nathry. He then chanced his arm with Plymouth Albion seconds and proving his class to the legend that is Graham Dorr and made his way to a pro contract with them. Post Plymouth, he went to Spain to play professionally, then found himself with a contract with Birmingham Solihull with Russell Earnshaw in charge. Then three great seasons at London Welsh before deciding to start his career in the city with playing part-time rugby. Some great stories from Mike. Enjoy. Welcome to the pod, former London Welsh player, Mike Denby. How are you, Mike?
Very well, thanks, Gareth. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Very good. What are you up to now, Mike? As you seem a very busy chap. So what's the career for you currently?
So I am, like many a rugby player, an insurance man. I work for a big American insurer called Chubb as the UKI head of sales for high net worth. So looking after wealthy people and their assets.
Nice one. And that seems quite a social job. Do you get to travel much with that and go to, I suppose, as I say, like jollies? We have jollies in media where I work. Do you have like many jollies in the insurance world?
Yeah, we get some good perks within it. I think the insurance industry over back in the day had quite a bad rap for sort of a boys club and half days in the office and half days in the pub. I think that's very sort of changed. But we do get to do some good things. I'm traveling around quite a lot at the moment. We're looking at expanding our European presence and that's meaning that I'm traveling to different locations. I was in Zurich last week, Dublin the week before. So yeah, all over the shop at the moment, but it's all good. I'm loving it. It's been a great journey. I've been with Chubb now 8 years. So out of insurance, this is 10 years since I left London Welsh in the summer. So yeah, quite a, I can't believe I've been in the working world that long.
And you look so young still, and you look in good shape. So you must be keeping fit as well, though.
Yeah, I try to. I think that when you're in a sociable and environment, you've got to do the balance. Probably a bit like yourself. You're running all these 5Ks to keep off the booze and the steaks that you keep putting on your social media.
That's a myth. Don't believe all that stuff. Do you know what I mean? So I said stay in the house most days. Don't worry about it. Look, do you keep in touch with some of your London Welsh mates, and do you look out for the results from your previous clubs at the weekend?
Yeah, I think once you've played, once you've played through several clubs, and if you look back through my history, I, was at several clubs through national leagues into London Welsh in the Championship and the Prem. So always keeping an eye on how those clubs are going. Some are sort of restarting following the turmoil that is rugby union in the lower leagues at the moment and financial issues, but all the clubs are still live and still going, and most have thriving sort of junior sections, and that's the heart and soul of clubs, isn't it, that those sections coming up through. But yeah, with regard to the players that I keep in touch with, well, I'm seeing Seb Stegman, actually catching up with him and Dan Brown on Wednesday, which will be good. Haven't seen those guys for a bit. Still chat with, Ed Jackson and Nick Scott and Jonathan Mills, etc. So yeah, there's still plenty within there. But obviously, when you look at the amount of people throughout the career, it is actually like a job. Some people are acquaintances, some people become lifelong mates, and that's just part and parcel of the journey.
100%. Look, you're one of the few pro players who came back and played a few games for London Welsh. I think we might have been at level 7 or 8. Why did you do that? And how did you find it?
So I ended up playing for the classic Italian team. And, you know, obviously I've, you know, looked pretty Italian with my roots. But that came about through actually current London Welsh legend Kai Griffiths. Kai had gone out to play for Milano in Italy after he'd gone back to where was the Ospreys? I think he'd gone back to and they'd sent him out on loan as injury cover. During that sort of summer period, I went out and saw him, had a night out, met a load of the different people. Anyway, the February following the Italian Classics were playing the Welsh Classics at the Knoll, and they were short of a couple of players. So out of the blue, I got a phone call to say, did I fancy running out for the Italian Classics as a guest? Luckily, I had a very good game. Didn't really think anything of it. Had a good night out. You know, couldn't really speak much Italian. sort of got by. And come the summer, got an invitation to Bermuda to the World Classics to represent Italy as a... they're allowed 3 non-nationals within their squad. And, you know, managed Kai and was a second... And we went out to Bermuda. We went out to Bermuda on that basis. So before that first tournament, I wanted to make sure I'd played a sort of couple of games for a warm up. I played 47 competitive games. I'd played 47 games or had 47 appearances at that point. So I needed 3 more. I wanted to have 3 more appearances to make my 50. Ended up with playing 3 games and having 50 appearances for Welsh. So that was just a sort of tick box round number.
No, nice. Did you enjoy playing that level, or because I just remember you coming on and you just tackled harder than anyone else, you know, because you could just tell you could hit people hard.
Yeah, I think it was one of those where when I hadn't played for a while, you were coming back and, you know, certainly the lungs weren't as fresh as they certainly used to be, and getting back into contact, no matter how, you know, whatever level you play at, picking yourself off the floor and getting up, making a tackle, but, you know, trying to do a bit is always going to cause you to be blowing a bit, to blow out some of the cobwebs. But I really enjoyed it. You know, I came to several of the training sessions in the build up to that during the week. So yeah, I certainly didn't want to be that person who just walked into a side and take someone else's place. I wanted to be able to deserve a position. We won a couple of games. So Kai was trying to then sign me up for the following two seasons, but I wasn't having any of it.
It's amazing what the incentive of a jug of beer could do for some people, doesn't it? Do you mean? But look, let's go to the back to the beginning. Where were you brought up? When did you start playing rugby?
Yeah, so I'm a Somerset boy, born and bred. My family are farmers just outside of Cheddar Gorge, a place called Webmore. Still farming, you know, there now, beef and sheep farm. You know, went to your sort of standard comp school and played football as a kid. Was a goalkeeper up until I was about 12, 13 years old. And then just started playing rugby at school. At the time, I was, you know, reasonably fast, so didn't really know what I was doing. So they chucked me out on the wing. So I started my career Sunday league rugby on the wing for Winscombe. And it was a brilliant time, you know, playing rugby with your mates. I was quite a big guy at that point. I'd had an early sort of growth spurt, so they'd put me on the wing. It'd be an 8-9 winger, and instead of running around people, I'd run over people and score quite a lot of tries. But I was always looking for contact, and that's when then the sort of coaches said, actually, we think you'd be, you know, you'd be pretty good in the back row. So I sort of transitioned at that point into sort of number 8, and then got picked up by Western Supermare, in who their first team was playing sort of National 3 at the time, but to go and play for their Colts. So that was under 17s, 18s at that stage, and was playing in the back row. And at that level, obviously everyone else caught up. And they moved me then to open side, because I just like tackling things and putting my head in and getting turnovers.
So you played for your local team, and they didn't have a Colt, or they did have a Colt, they weren't sufficiently good enough to have that pathway to a senior rugby.
They had a senior team, but it was a lower level. I sort of wanted to play at as high a level as I could, and almost got, I suppose, poached, because a couple of my mates had gone across, and it was, you know, come and play for Western, and they were putting together what they were looking to be one of the best sort of Colt sides in that area, and you know, we had a successful sort of couple of seasons, winning like the Somerset Cup and different tournaments and going unbeaten, and you know, within that squad that I was with was ex-Ireland international Dan Toohey, the second row. So he actually was, again, a footballer, played as a centre forward, joined us, you know, this 6'4", 6'5", lanky streak of piss. And he was out on the wing because he didn't know what he was doing. And then we had a Western Supermare legend, Graham Buller, who was a second row and was like, right, you'd be great in the second row. We'll be able to chuck you up and win all these lineouts. And he moved into the second row, ended up going to Artbury. And next thing he's, went over to Ulster and he's playing for Ireland. So, scored against New Zealand with the first touch of the ball, picked through a ruck and scored in the corner.
Not bad, is it?
Yeah. He said it's from the halfway line, but it was about the 22. But yeah.
Shows that you were ambitious about your rugby then. So did you feel then you had this ability to maybe pursue a professional career? And in the sort of the Colts of West Supermare, was there an opportunity for you to get like county recognition, or were they aligned to like any of the Premiership academies then? Or did that not not happen in those days?
No, that wasn't really, they weren't linked. To be honest, I think they should have been linked more to, and they are linked now with Bristol Bears. There should have been more of a link up on that basis. But at the time there wasn't. You know, I played county rugby all the way through my sort of senior career for Somerset. But at that stage, it was very much, you know, finish my A-levels and then looking to go to university. And it wasn't choosing a university because they were good at rugby. It was more about getting my business degree. And I was traveling back to, you know, went down to Plymouth University. Didn't know who Plymouth Albion were or anything like that at that stage. And was traveling back because at the time I had a girlfriend in Western, and Western were paying me, you know, mileage expenses to come back and play on the weekend. So I'd come back once a week for training and then play on a Saturday for the first team.
So how did you transition from Colts then to senior rugby? Did you transition, did that happen in a sixth form, or only once you were an adult and you'd left to go to university, but you came back to play, because you didn't play university rugby at all for Plymouth at the same time, or did you?
No, so I took a gap year after school, but when I was 18, I sort of broke into the I broke into the first team and was playing first team in on the bench or in the back row. And I then had, had a year out where I was working on a building site to pay for university. Got to the January, being on this building site and my best mate and I, and it was a freezing cold day. It was tipping down with rain and we were like, how much money have you got? I was like, oh, I think I've got about $5,000. He's like, I think I've got about the same. I'm like, let's go to Australia. So we went to a travel agent the following day, and within a week we were in Sydney and we went traveling for 3 months and spent all the money we'd saved up to go to university with. I played first team rugby during up to that point during my sort of gap year, and then I came back to university and then was traveling back. There was no view to playing for Plymouth or anything like that. It was right, I'll just play National 3 or Southwest 1, whichever league they were in at that point. And you know, it was a good standard of rugby, had some great mates, and it was just quite convenient, really.
And did you do that all the way through university? So your degree course like 3 or 4 years, and you just every midweek, every weekend when you could, you'd be playing for them?
Yeah, so I did it was a 4-year sandwich course. So we had an industrial year where I worked for the chipset manufacturer Intel, mm-hmm. the computer guys. So that was based out of Swindon. So the first 2 years, look, Plymouth up to Weston's about an hour and a half. So I was doing that just up and back. And then when I went to Swindon again, it was an hour back, so I was just you know up and back the other way, and then it was my last year. I decided, you know what, it's my last year of uni, I need to knuckle down. I can't be going backwards and forwards all the time. I don't have time to do it, and that's when I got in contact with Plymouth and said, could I run out for your second team, the West Country Warriors, and got invited down to some training sessions, and that's how I met the legend that is Graham Dawe.
Yeah, so everyone talks about Graham Dawe as this legend, like he's a great coach, but also quite a different sort of character, isn't he?
Oh, he's absolutely mental. So he, you know,
how is he mental then? Tell our listeners how is he different to everyone else.
So he would not do anything that he wouldn't do himself. So at the time he was still playing. So he ended up, you know, he was playing in National League Rugby in, I think it was on his 50th birthday year, still hooking. He had certain fitness tests that he wanted you to achieve to make sure that your capacity, it was all about work rate. He loved a 5K row. He loved the 12-minute run to see how much distance you can get. And there were some woods around Plymouth that we'd have to meet at this checkpoint. And he would send every single player, props, whatever, on a 5K run around this off-road track around these woods. But he would do it as well. And he would love to beat people, and he would make sure that he continuously beat people and then made sure they knew about it, that a 50-year-old bloke was, or 45, 46, was beating the 21, 22-year-old who, you know, didn't have the lung capacity to beat him. But he was still farming, again, farming stock down in the West Country there. And it was, you know, he created a hard environment, and it was very sort of sink or swim. I remember one of my first training sessions with him. They've got a rubber crumb where they would do sort of line outs and things, and I was on the second team, and he was throwing in, and he was one of the old school through with one hand. So threw this ball in, first team practice. Anyway, I've come sort of keen as mustard, straight through the middle, onto the ball. And next thing, I'm getting uppercut. And Graham Dawes having a scrap with me. and I had two options at that point. It was like, well, is this a test? Does he want to see if I, you know, if I'll go at him, or if I fill him in, am I not going to stay playing for this team? And at that point, I didn't have a contract. It didn't really matter. So I sort of ragdolled him to the floor, and next thing we're having a ruck on the floor, and then he just starts laughing, and he's literally just giggling on the floor, and he. It is. But yeah, there were several players within there. So sort of Gareth Evans, who obviously played for London Welsh. He was down there. James Tideswell. You know, set names that listeners will be sort of aware of. But you know, Graham used to have the sort of 3-inch metal studs. And would use them, whatever. We had this one scrumming session where he believed your core should be as strong as 1,000 apples. And you know, I'm on the flank pushing. And next thing, he's standing on the backs of the props to see if they could hold his weight. while we were pushing on this scrumming machine, and I'm just going, is this real? This is crazy. But look, I'll give Graham huge credit, because, you know, he picked me out of university. I unfortunately got injured. A prop's foot slipped and broke my hand in probably the first 6 months of me being playing for the second team. And I had to have it in a cast. But he said to me, Denby, you need to create a work rate. He goes, you need to create a work rate. You're going to meet me Tuesday and Thursday, 6 a.m. and we're going to do some fartlek training. And he, to start with, because he wanted me to get an engine, he would do it with me, and he would be beating me. But by the end of it, he would use a bike to sort of chase me around. So he used to chase me around the hoe in Plymouth, calling me all sorts and saying that if I didn't push myself to a limit that I was sick, that I would never make it. I came back from that injury with my hand, and he threw me in to start against Northampton Saints at Brickfields for my first team debut.
This would be the championship, yeah? Because obviously
this was National One. So this was the year that they'd come. So it was before the split.
Okay.
So that was when there was...
But it's the second tier, though, wasn't it? It was the second tier of rugby. So what is the championship now?
Yeah.
Because Northampton were relegated. Because I remember London Welsh would have been in that league at the time. Because I remember they brought like Carlos Spencer and Chris Aston to London Welsh. So do you play against them then?
Yeah, so my debut playing seven was Carlos Spencer at 10, Bruce Rihanna at 15, Chris Ashton on the wing, Dylan Hartley hooking, Tongawea came off the bench. They had a serious setup going on. And it was one of those, go and run around and try and get close to, you know, try and get a shot on Carlos Spencer and see how you get on. And I got nowhere near him. One of those players who just had so much time on the ball.
So had you finished university then? And did you have so you're still at university. And so you're like on a part-time contract with Plymouth, like, as you know, where there's like play and get
paid.
Play.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was it. It was I'd been given an opportunity to basically train, play professionally, try and finish a degree, but not have to drive back up to Western. So I took it, and look, it was the best decision I made, because it led to me getting a full-time contract, and then being able to play professionally for 7 years.
Yeah, that's amazing. So after your degree, then, is that when Plymouth decided to offer you a full-time contract, and then you played for Plymouth for another season then, is that right?
Yeah, so after that game against Northampton, I sort of played a fair few games for the rest of that year. I was still playing university rugby at the time as well. So, like all students, they think they can play on a Wednesday and then play on a Saturday as well, and then all the fun and games that goes in between it, as students do. So I then pulled myself out of most of the university stuff, bar, the varsities and things like that. But got selected to play for England students, what's now, I think, the universities now, during that period. I was finishing my degree, playing for England students, and playing for Plymouth Albion at the time as well. And then you get towards the end of the year, and then the Somerset stuff starts, and I was then sort of asked to play for England counties as well. So
wow.
My last year at university was fairly full on. I was lucky enough that Graham retained me, offered me my first professional contract, and I then had the pleasure of a first pre-season and then a full year where I was lucky enough to be sort of first choice and play a huge amount of games in that sort of second season. That second season was a tricky one, because it was the year that it was decided that the championship would come in. So you were basically having, was it 15, 16 teams, 16 teams, wasn't it, going down to 12. So, we'd had a really strong start to the year. We were, above, way above the last sort of mid-table and above, not even in the realms of sort of relegations and, contracts were being discussed and this, that, and the other. And then we had a sort of a run after Christmas where we sort of got ourselves dragged back into a bit of a shit fight at the bottom there. And all contracts got sort of put on hold at that, at that point. So, there were people wanting to know what was going on with their sort of careers, but Plymouth has said basically until we guarantee that we are going to be in the championship, and at that point where it was reasonably funded and would have that money that would go alongside it, they couldn't commit to the contracts that they were suggesting at that point. We ended up staying up, but it was all very, very sort of late, last game of the season sort of thing. They would beat Esher, I think it was, to sort of stay up.
Is that the time when did Alex Davis and people like Ben Mercer play for Plymouth as well in that season?
So Alex did. Alex came in sort of that year afterwards, but Alex, him and I sort of crossed over at that period. So that's how, where I first knew Al. And Ben, and you had Clayton's and people like that. So yeah, there was plenty of plenty of people who went on to do some pretty impressive things and play at some a really, really decent level. Unfortunately, I negotiations with Plymouth broke down. I thought I had agreed a contract and it was pulled from me. I was seen as too expensive, which that's up to Graham. I think a lot of players at that point, you suddenly lose five teams out of a, or four or five teams out of a league. There's a lot of people on the market and deals to be done. And I didn't leave on particularly good terms. I've seen him since and called him out on it, and we've had a We've had a beer since. His basic response was, if I hadn't pulled your contract, you wouldn't have played in the Premiership. So you should be thanking me.
Sliding doors and destiny and all that
yeah,
sort of thing.
That was it, yeah. And so ended up leaving Plymouth after that second season. And it was a summer period, and obviously there was so many players on the market. It was trying to find what was right. And ex-Cornish Pirates coach Mark Hewitt, who had gone out to start in the professional league at the time in Spain, in a place called Villajoyosa, which is between Alicante and Benidorm, and they had a really good setup there. And he basically said, "Look, come out, come and play for me. We'll work on a load of stuff with you, which come." Because everyone's got such thin squads, come Christmas, there's bound to be back row injuries, and that'll create an opportunity to come back into the UK in that December period.
So Pro League in Spain. So how many clubs were in this Pro League in Spain? And
there was 10 teams. So you know, all the way through the country, through Barcelona up to Getafe, up to all over the shop. So we had some fair old long bus trips or flights or bits and pieces. But again, met some guys there who are now some of my best friends from all over the world. And you had a lot of Kiwis, Aussies, South Africans who were within that league. But again, it was one where. If you look at the years there, money sort of fell out of Europe. The big sport in Spain is basketball, and you know, money's pumped into that. At the time, Spanish rugby wasn't a big thing. Well, you look at them now in the second tier, and them and Portugal and all of that. They've got a really competitive league within that. But yeah, so went out and the plan had been to keep fit, play some games, play some competitive rugby. It was probably what would have been the now national one standard, really, if I was looking back on it, train professionally and be able to keep that fitness levels up. Unfortunately, I bad tackle and an ACL reconstruction later. So the phone had been picked up to my agent at the time to talk to a couple of clubs. Actually, London Welsh had shown some interest at that point. Bristol, Doncaster at the time, had inquired. Before anything too concrete could be put, knee was done, and that was out for the season.
So you went there for played some games, and then by Christmas time you were injured, and you had like 9 months recuperating. Were you back in the UK then, or did you stay in Spain?
No, so I had the well, actually, I had the operation in. So I did the knee in early December, mid December. Obviously, to let the swelling go down and sort things out. And then I had the surgery in mid-January in Spain. And one of the best knee surgeons in Spain was at one of the hospitals in Alicante. And decided, actually, do you know what? To rehab in the warm, full-time physio. Like, if I came back to the UK, I would have been paying for my own physio or trying to jump onto a club and see if I could use their facilities. You do all your sessions and you can get in the sea and do all of that. So then I became a dedicated rehabber. And I was back within 6 months for pre-season.
But not pre-season in Spain, was it pre-season for a new club? So I don't want to say this in a way, you used the Spanish club to get better and then left them to go to a club in the UK then, yeah?
So,
was that? Who was that then you played for?
That was Russell Earnshaw and Birmingham Solihull, Perth MCs.
Wow, because you know he's got a reputation as a coach. So you had Graham Dorr, Russell Earnshaw, who obviously went on to help England under 18s or England under 20s yeah. and got his own sort of coaching business. So he was at Birmingham. So you were there for a season. What was that like?
Look, Rusty's an unbelievable coach. The way he looks at things, the you know the behaviours and how he changes mindset. He's someone who wants people to express themselves. He's someone who's all about play, finding solutions. And you know, again, we had some you know amazing sort of players within there that had come from all over the shop. But he pulled. You know, he pulled people together, and look, we were the smallest budget team, and you know, a team of 12 in the championship, and unfortunately, again, we got relegated as a team. But I had a brilliant time, and again, some great memories and some great friends. It was. You know, it was hard. It was, you know, transitioning back. They weren't fully full time. You know, lots of people with sort of secondary jobs, and you know, I was doing some stuff in a baby car seat manufacturer's warehouse, and you know, selling some supplements and bits and pieces. You know, alongside it. But I learned a lot, and I grew a lot, and. You know, Rusty was and the coaching staff there were great, and look, ultimately that led to me playing in the championship for a season with them, and attracted the eye of Steve Lewis, who then approached me to come and join Welsh under Phil Greening and Mike Friday.
Yeah, so obviously you've done enough to get noticed because obviously London Welsh had an eye on you when you were in, you know, Spain, and then they must have, you know, Steve must have kept tabs on all these players, you know, with his eye on bringing this team together. So they signed you with, as you say, Mike Friday and Phil Greening's blessing. You turn up, I take it they're not there, are they?
No. So when you think you've been signed by two coaches and you turn up and there's someone completely different, you don't really know what to make of it. But ultimately, you have to impress and you have to try and create create an impression for the new coach. And you know, when you're talking about coaches and you add another, you know, character and legend of legend of the rugby world of Mr. Lynn Jones.
Yeah, so you haven't been at Plymouth and Birmingham and Solihull. What was your like first impressions of, you know, another championship club like London Welsh and in Old Deer Park in particular, because the facilities there are, you know, tired, shall we say? And what do you think of all that when you turned up?
Yeah, like, you know, I look back now and I'm the big draw was London. I always knew after I got my business degree that I would end up in the city. So it was more me working a path into getting into the city to then trying to create opportunities off of that. I knew I was never going to be good enough or big enough to play at the, you know, international level. But you know, could I create a good career out of it and you know, play a professional sport for a sustained period of time? And the answer to that was yes. And I was very lucky. You know, I had my fair few injuries and, you know, moved around a few clubs. But actually, you know, when I came to Welsh and you look at the history, you walk into the clubhouse and there's the aura around the Lions and you start to, you know, you get a bit of, you know, hair standing up on the back of your neck, and you know, walking down the path is as you come in and you see the pagoda in the background. It's a really impressive place, and it's a beautiful place. And actually, being able to come training to such an environment was a pleasure. Look, where I was training in Birmingham was a lot less facilities than there were there. This was a standard sort of old school rugby club with, you know, a gym in a, you know, in a shed, and we were playing our games at Solihull Moors at the football club. So you were constantly sort of moving around. You know, Plymouth facilities slightly better, but again, actually, sort of, yes, they had a couple more stands and temporary stands within it, but actually, the facilities at Welsh were, you know, they were no different to what I knew. So I hadn't come out of an academy. I hadn't come out of, you know, Worcester or at the, you know, with their indoor facilities, or, you know, you look at Surrey and things like that, and people were building all these high tech things. So yeah, it's just one of those, just, well, you just get on with it. And look, I was given an opportunity from a club that had been relegated to playing in, I think Welsh had finished third or fourth the season before. They were looking to try and get, you know, push on to be promoted, you know, coming into one of the top six clubs within that league with a view to kicking on again. And that was exciting. So it was less about, you know, the niceties and actually more about just getting on with it.
So you get on with your rugby career, playing for, you know, possibly a higher standard, you know, a higher standard club. So you got Lynn Jones as coach, as you just said. And so did the club set you up with like a housing, because you're still a young lad at this stage. I'm going to say, guess you're around 24. That's that sort of age, 25, you guess, London Welsh. And did they sort of, yeah, because the squad we had there was a lot of great bunch of lads from a supporter's perspective, but you're playing with them. And did you live with a lot of those lads as well?
Yeah, I'd have been 26 going on 27 actually. So because I was, you know, everything was a bit later for me because I had a year out and things like that with the uni, and I didn't actually start pro until I was sort of 24. When you actually look at the timings on it, but yeah, moved into a house in Witten with obviously within the house there. You know, there were so many different people who there was turnover, let's say. It was a 4 or 5 bed property, and I think everyone had stayed there at some stage, whether it was Kai Griffiths, Ed Jackson, you know, Billy Moss, Al Davies, Will Hurrell, Ryan Davies. People would come up and, you know, if they weren't living in London, they would come and stay on the couch and things like that. So look, we had a great house, and you know, I wouldn't say it was anywhere I'd want to live now. It was pretty minging. I'm not. but you get up in the morning, you go to training. You know, in the marquee at the end of the ground, you know, the marquee of muscle. do your sessions. Come back in the afternoon and sort of crack on. So yeah, look, it was. It was great to get to know people and create some bonds with people, which, you know, some I've remained close with, some you don't.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. But that first season was pretty special because you played at Old Deer Park, and we timed our run for glory so well. It's pretty special time. And also, you're quite a competitive position, yours, you know, the back row with the talent we had there. So it's a... You know, challenging to get a spot in there, and you played in about all but one of the playoff games, I think. So I think you had 6 pool games, just 2 legs of semi-finals and finals. I think 9 out of those 10 games at the end of the season, you were in the team.
Yeah, look, we had great competition within that back row. Me and Hilsey, you know, both different types of players. You know, he had an unbelievable hands and skill set. I was a bit more dogged on the ball. You know, we used to laugh, them being a tackle jackal, until they changed the rules and got to give this gap before going on to a ball. Now, killed my career, that did. But look, it was just giving to that team. And that year was probably the most special year that I had playing sort of professional rugby. You know, played the vast number of games, was Lynn's, you know, managed to get myself as Lynn's number one within that, and obviously played in the, you know, the semis and the finals, and Well, the rest is history. What a finish that year was.
It's unbelievable. We'll come on to that in a minute. But what did you make of Lynn as a coach in your first season? Because, as you said, he's quite a character, and a lot of people have, admired him and his coaching ability. But from your perspective, he said he made you're his number one. So did you enjoy him as being your coach?
Yeah, I very much did. Look, he was, he obviously used to be a back row himself. So the way he saw the game, and, he taught me a lot about positioning, thinking about where I needed to be, thinking about the lines of running that I needed to make to be in support, when to attack a breakdown, when not to, and he was pretty, he was pretty relentless with it. But actually, it wasn't just about forward play. He created an environment that was hugely competitive, but created it with quite a lot of humour. You've met him probably many more times than I've spent with him, but he's a hell of a character if you can understand what he's saying. So, and he loves a beer as well. And look, although it was a professional ear and a professional club, he wanted there to be a camaraderie within the team and for the boys to get on and have and create some special moments together. And I think actually when you look at how that season unfolded and the events of the lead into those sort of finals, we weren't the best team within it, but we had the best, camaraderie together, and I think that's what pulled us through. Because it was a real, shove two fingers up the RFU, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it was fantastic. And you talk about camaraderie, how you gel together, but you certainly did that post the final whistle against Cornish Pirates, didn't you? Because, we had Dan George on about a couple of months ago, and, his stag and wedding, wasn't it, in the 4 days after the Cornish Pirates thing. So, from your perspective, there's, quite a boozy 3 or 4 days, I imagine, for you and the players.
Yeah, like I said, look, when you're told an hour before kickoff from the RFU that you can't, we're not going to allow London Welsh to go up, whatever happens in this final. We have a rousing speech from Bledin and Lynn and Steve Lewis saying, let's go stick two fingers up. Let's go and, give us the problem. Go and do what you do. Use this as motivation, and then and we'll sort the rest out. And not being funny, that first half of rugby was the best rugby that the team had played all season. And we put ourselves into such a good position going into that second leg back at the Kazam. It was almost a, well, unless something dramatically goes wrong, we've got a far enough lead to that we're fairly guaranteed to get promoted. And, we obviously did that. And, yeah, the celebrations post that, I'll be honest, I can't really remember. there's a photo of where was it? Trying to think now. Yeah, I'm just going back into the house, and we've just cracking open champagne and red wine, and we're traveling around all over the southwest of London, causing absolute mayhem for a few days. And then it was obviously the stag do's and weddings and a couple of weeks off, and Lynn wanted us back in earlier than before, because next thing we're playing in the Prem.
Well, it's funny you said that, because you said you talked about being promoted, but when you won the league, you didn't know you promoted. And it was a month afterwards, so I think it was the 30th of June, you were told you were promoted, and obviously it was 2 months then to first game against Leicester at the Kassam. As you say, so when you got, did you ever actually ever think that you would have been promoted though? Like, you know, I know that everyone said it, like Bled in Lynn, but saying it and it actually happening is very different, aren't they?
Yeah, I think because all the way in the build up to it, there was the there was various grounds that were sort of being looked at, or you know, whether it was, could we link in with Quinns and do alternate weekends, or could we link in with what was it? It was the Irish ground that were
Reading,
you know,
yeah,
Reading, or you know, ultimately the Kazam came to the table, and look, all of those stadiums are fine for use for rugby. So I think that piece was, I think I always thought we would have a ground. It was then just whether we would spend, we had enough money in the coffers to put the legal charge to, you know, the RFU to put us up. And we just had to go with the mindset that, you know, when we were going back to pre-season, we had to, irrelevant of what squad might be coming in or new players, because that was a completely separate headache for Steve, and that we couldn't deal with that. We didn't know who was going to come. There was, you know, the rumour mill flying around, but it wasn't until we had the guaranteed money for bringing in the Prem that people could then spend the money on the back door, because otherwise you'd have had an unbelievable Championship squad.
So pre-season has started before you knew you were actually in the Premiership, was it? Is that your recollection?
Yeah, it's a bit of a blur, I'll be honest. I think we had, I was definitely still training, because I wanted to make sure that I was coming into that pre-season in a decent state. Ed Jackson and I always wanted to be the sort of fittest of the forwards, and we would compete against each other with the you know, down ups and shuttles and things like that to see who you know, who could win that, and we prided ourselves on, you know, on that and doing the extras. So but yeah, I think you know, look, when we came back in fully and suddenly their new players are arriving, and actually look, it was quite a big turnover of players, or players that were brought in, you then had to mould what was probably one of the tightest squads, who had gone through a huge amount to get there, to then actually adding reinforcements that changed the lineup of that squad dramatically.
Big time, wasn't it? Like big time, because you had competition with back row from people like Ed Williamson, Alfie Tuilala, Adam Baldin. You know, they came in. Then you had the lads. Lee Beattie, the lads who came in from French clubs. You know, like Neil Briggs, Arthur Jolly. You know,
Frankie Montanella with his 300 cigarettes a day.
Most of them are half time.
Yeah, no.
You'd always see them at Kassam. You could see these smoke come from somewhere. They've gone outside by one of the gates, 7 fag at half time. It was so funny. But you know, again, the squad that they put together, the club, made us very competitive in the Premiership, even though, you know, the RFU didn't really want us there, gave us the hardest start possible, Leicester Tigers at home, and Quinns, you know, who just won the league away, their first two games. Do you know what I mean? It didn't help. So where did you get to make your Premiership debut then? Which game was that?
So I actually, it was the second game against Quinns. So, you know, and what a way to make your debut on a Friday night lights at the Stoop against Quinns, running out there was, you know, an amazing experience. And you know, although we got pumped by 40 points, I had a pretty good game that day, and you know, as debuts go, it's not a bad one to have your debut shirt up on the wall. Well, I need to get it on the wall, but yeah.
No, it's class, isn't it? It's, you know, it's class. And I think that season, we were a lot more competitive than people were expecting. You know, it was a lot of tight games that we lost by 7 or 8 points.
Well, but, you look at some of the decisions, and you can go back to small margins, but yeah. I think that the 5-point deduction with Tyson, you know, with Tyson Keats' registration, you know, that's an absolute horror show, you know, and that derailed things a little bit. And then, you know, a couple of games of last minute sort of penalties where we were, you know, Gloucester away and things like that, where those games were there to be won, and there are moments there. And then you look at the, you know, the scrum, the Luke Pearce,
Hey, do you know what? I interviewed him for one of my podcasts. And I asked him about that, and he realised, you know, we came in, saw Lynn Jones. That was his second ever Premiership game, and he realised he made a mistake, you know. But obviously, we still had loads of games left then, so it was in our hands still, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean?
But we couldn't, but it's, you know, when you're, you know, when you're in those positions of small margins, it's about momentum, and as soon as you start to lose momentum, and you know, if you think 5 points from Tyson, 5 points from Farries, you know, 4 points from Gloucester, suddenly 14 points, well, stay up.
We'd be in the Champions Cup now.
Well, exactly.
you're right. And also, but there was some great moments in that, you know, like obviously Gav Henson played, people that, it's just some brilliant games as supporters. And also you played in a lot of European games and LV Cup games as well. You know, these are different experiences because, you know, you played, I think, remember playing Exeter, and they were all their youngsters, like Slade and Noel and all, were playing in those days, weren't they?
Yeah, look, I look back on the Premier and probably disappoint. I'm hugely proud to have played in the Prem and played in the, you know, played against Stade Français and you know, in the Challenge Cup and things like that, which, you know, amazing moments. But actually, look, I picked up a few injuries because of the way I played, and unfortunately, when you're, you know, trying to make tackle after tackle and game after game, and you know, I picked up a few bits of, you know, a few bad injuries along the way, and you know, I had 7, 8, 9 games within that sort of Prem year, whether it was the European stuff or whether it was Prem stuff. Or LV Cup stuff, but it was a bit of a little bit of a disappointing year, really. And they, you know, the staff had brought in Carl Kerwin at that point, who you know, he was a, you know, fantastic player, and he came in for that sort of after we'd got that first relegation. Because I'd picked up so many injuries at that point. Obviously Lynn had moved on after that relegation, and Justin Bunnell had come in, and you know, Justin wanted size. And if you look at the team that he put out, it was the biggest team that he wanted. But Justin was very upfront with me, and you know, he said, look, whatever happens, you're going to be number two. And I was like, well, as long as you told me, I can't really argue with it. I can just do what I do and get on with it. So then I just play with a bit more freedom.
That's fair enough. And actually, that was one of my questions, like, how different was it supposed to Lynn? But you've answered that, really, because, you know, you're not the first one to say, like, he liked big lads. But what was unique about his team selections that season, do you know?
Oh, is this a trick question?
not really. I don't try and put you on the spot. Obviously, I'm putting you on the spot, but is there something unique about each of his team selections?
Well, if you're saying it like that, no one team selection was the same. Is that
correct? He had 33 different teams that season. No consistency. But obviously, he chose the squad approach to the season, and again, we timed our run perfectly, didn't we, that season?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, I think what those 3 years that I was, you know, lucky enough to play for Welsh, two promotions and a year in the Prem, it's not a bad way to finish your sort of pro rugby career. And actually, the thing for me is I went out on my terms. I knew I wanted to go in the city. I'd obviously got the opportunity to come to London with London Welsh, and you know, I was using my time, my days off to go into the city and do work experience and try different career options. And, you know, the value that the RPA and the opportunities that they give players is second to none. And, you know, Damien Hopley, obviously now finished there, but has created a really valuable tool that I don't think people use enough until they need to, whereas it's there actually to really help you during your career.
So you had the foresight to do that, obviously encouraged by the RPA and what they do, but were there many players like that at Welsh, or were they just, you know, focusing on their rugby and, you know, maybe a bit younger than you, just enjoying the time off in between training and playing?
Look, there was many people who had unlimited Cineworld cards and would go to the cinema three or four times a week when I was putting a suit on and go and do some work experience. Or there was plenty of gamers, Xbox or PlayStation, which, you know, that wasn't really my bag. So, look, I think if you look at the situation that London Welsh were in, and it wasn't a big money club, you know, wages that were earned bar a few, you would need to, you know, you were certainly needing to have another career at some point. And I think the younger guys, look, I was 27, 28 at the time, I could see where my career was going, whereas there are guys there in, you know, 19, 20, 21 coming through who don't have that foresight, haven't done maybe the university piece because they've gone into an academy or not quite made it there, but still think they can crack on. So yeah, look, there were certainly people who were entrepreneurial. There were different people looking at different brands or trying to set things up, or people looking at careers and studying. But actually, a lot of people do it in. They start it after they've had to do it rather than doing it in advance.
They're told their career's over and then they look for another career rather than planning for it beforehand. So you decided at the end of that sort of that season we got promoted by beating Bristol, you said, like, was there an offer for you to play in the Premiership with Justin, or was it then you decided, do you know what, I need to work and I want to start my career?
So I got offered an opportunity to move into the city or the process was probably in March, April time, is when I had a work contract was put on the table. And actually I sat down with Justin and said, look, I've got this work contract. I've got a semi-pro gig at East Grinstead to go and play down, to go down there. You know, what do you reckon? And he said, look, what you've got on the table there, I can't guarantee you rugby. We didn't know we were getting promoted at that stage. Obviously, it was still. He said, look, there's a contract for you as a sort of second choice player to be behind Carl, which, you know, I could continue on that basis. It was, you know, it was no drama. It was still, you just become a professional trainer at that stage. And actually, I thought I'd have more of my career than that. So actually, you know, and I wasn't injured at that point. And so I went, you know what? Thanks very much, Justin. I'm actually going to take the opportunity to go into the city at 29. I didn't want to start a career at 35. You know, there was a couple of sort of championship clubs who were, you know, offering contracts or wanted to have conversations, etc. You know, and yeah, made that decision there and then to go. Look, I didn't have a mortgage, didn't have a wife at that point, and go and start a career. But then I could still play semi-pro because I wasn't injured. And that's exactly what I did. And again, that was, you know, a lot of fun.
Yeah, look, you know, what a way to bow out of professional rugby. Your last game is at Memorial Ground, you know, and London Welsh get promoted.
Wow, it was last game. Yeah, I was, you know, I had drunk about 5 litres of cider before I ran on the pitch.
Okay. Travel reserve, sorry. Okay, apologies.
I was John Terry, lifting the trophy on the TV.
I think you lifted both my boys on your shoulders that night as well, because they're only two London Welsh lads who are under 18 probably there at the time. But no, they were great memories. So what was it like then stepping down to play semi-pro, and did you enjoy playing, because you played for East Grinstead and Old Eltamians, didn't you? So what was that like for you?
I went down to East Grinstead, and again, there was the... Yeah, Ollie Frost was down there. Adam Clayton, who has sort of done the rounds as a player within the sort of championship, and I'd played with him at Birmingham Solihull. So there were players that sort of I knew, and they were trying to put, you know, a bit of a squad together to make a push. Gavin Gleave there, you know, he was trying to get investment, because it's obviously down by Gatwick, to be the hub and have a 3G pitches and this, that, the other for when the international flights come over, and then be a hub for a training centre. Unfortunately, the board within the junior club didn't want that, and it sort of all fell apart. But look, it was tough going down on a Tuesday, Thursday night, driving down, playing, driving back, going to work the next day. Play on a Saturday, playing in sort of nationals, what was it at that time, National 3. It was, you know, it was pretty hard work, but went back to my roots. Look, I didn't go through academy, so, you know, I played for Western Supermare up until I was 24. So that was no different. It was the same league ultimately. So there's a lot more. You know, when you take out that professional piece to it, it's a lot more sort of finish a game on the bus, few beers, and that bit of a crack. But look, unfortunately, because, you know, Gav ended up pulling his support for the club, and the East Grinstead sort of semi-professional outfit folded, unfortunately. And that's when I moved across to Old Eltaniums.
And they were Nat 2 then, yeah?
So they were Nat 2, yeah, and they got promoted to Nat 1, yeah. So, and that was awesome. look, they were bankrolled by a South African sort of millionaire, and, you know, that I had better kit there than I did playing professionally. It was all Under Armour. It was, look, I think, unfortunately, he passed away quite suddenly, left a fair bit of debt behind him, unfortunately, which is super sad for the businesses and family and things like that. But, you know, the dealings with the club and the dealings that I had with him, he was a brilliant bloke. And, you know, he said to us when we were playing in Nat 2, if we got promoted to National 1, he would take the squad, all expenses paid, to Marbella. And we obviously got promoted, and he took 30 lads, and it was one of the most ridiculous weekends I've ever had. you know, I was we turned up on the first day, and that season I think we scored 123 points in that season, in that Nat 2 season, to get promoted. And we were in Ocean Beach in Marbella, and he ordered 123 bottles of Moët, and we did a champagne spray around the pool in Marbella. Day two, we had scored, it was something like 79 or 80 tries. It was maybe even a few more than that. Right, we'll have 80 bottles of, you know, Veuve Clicquot, and we'll do a champagne spray here.
No expense spared.
No, look, he basically said to us beforehand, I want you guys to act like millionaires and for one weekend only, no expenses spared, order whatever you want, and it's all on me. And, you know, we were in a nightclub at 3 o'clock in the morning, and he comes up to me and one of the other guys and goes, right, guy, I'm done, this is me, and handed over €3,500 and said, don't come home until you spend it. So, you know, that was, you know, an amazing, you know, that was, you know, that was a brilliant time. But come COVID sort of kicked in, and, or just before COVID, and I was like, you know what, I'm now high enough within, after I'd moved on from the original company that I joined Bluefin, I joined Chubb, and I was earning enough money not to have to then be playing on a weekend. And actually, I missed out on a huge amount of, you know, when you play on a Saturday, you miss out on a huge amount of stuff over weekends. And, you know, you're recovering on a Sunday, you never really want to do too much because your body's bruised and battered, or you're hungover. And so actually then having weekends back, having evenings back, I actually look back now and with what the missus has got in the diary and don't know how I played rugby, to be honest.
You're not saying you're under a thumb, are you, Mike? You wouldn't say that at all, no.
No, I know. She definitely would say I'm not, considering my job. As you say, I'm traveling around everywhere. Yeah.
But happy wife, happy life, as I say. So you are married. Look, when you look back at your time at London Welsh, you know, what are those sort of key memories for you, really? Because you would say your best 3 years of playing professionally, or most successful 3 years, and was at London Welsh. And so, what sort of key memories do you take away from that?
I suppose looking back, obviously the highlight, you know, the highlights of it, obviously that Premiership promotion, that promotion year. I was, you know, I was probably the fittest and played the most rugby during that period. You know, making your debut against Chris Robshaw on a Friday night lights. He was England captain at the time. You know, that's super, you know, super special in itself. And actually, look, helping people and when Carl Kerwin came in, didn't know anyone. You know, I took him under my wing when he first came in, and you know, he always says it to me. He said, "Look, you're the first person who came up, shook my hand," and ultimately, I took your position. I said, "Well, look, mate, you know, sometimes you know, you know, I would fight for it, but you know, to help him develop and grow, and you know, he'd come out of, I think, Rotherham at that point, and you know, he went on to play for Worcester and have a hugely successful career. So I think helping some of those younger people and, you know, talking them through different experiences, because I was a bit older, I think that was quite, you know, quite special. And look, Welsh is and always will be a special club. And look, I think the fans who would travel wherever, there's obviously the core band, and you look at the numbers now that are still turning up on a, you know, on a Saturday. You look at the lunches that you put on, and you know, the volunteers that are within that club make it very, very special. And it's just great to see the club back to you know, a winning ways. Yes, it's you know, not at the level it you know, it was previously, but all of the infrastructure has been put in place to make sure it's around for another 125 years. And that's, you know, and that's what makes the club a really special place. And then actually I love the coaching part of it. You know, when you're in the Prem, we were either traveling down to, you know, some of the schools around Oxford, obviously, you know, at that point, or, you know, coming to some of the London, and being able to put on coaching clinics and with some of these juniors who will have gone on to play probably local league rugby or even greater levels than that. So yeah, that was, you know, they were some of the, you know, a couple of the good bits from it.
That's great. Look, Mike,
It's been great catching up with you. It's great to hear about your rugby journey and how much you loved your time at London Welsh. I don't know if you know, but there's a players' reunion on April the 6th. There's quite a few from your generation going to that. I appreciate your busy life. But look, you know where we are. So it'd be great to see you back at Aldia Park soon to come and watch, come bring your missus and can reminisce about the good old times. But Mike, look, thanks again for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Don't mind, Gareth. Cheers. Thanks.
Cheers.